good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, February 17th, 2022. Hi, Dave.
Excuse me.
Oh, stop.
Hello, Melody.
Just stop. He's making fun of me.
Happy National Random Acts of Kindness Day.
And so why are you not doing that?
Well, you know, we do kid around on this program every now and then, but I just want to say how much I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts and opinions with the listeners of Financial Survival and to the readers of our newsletters and blogs. You know, I consider you a trailblazer in this industry, and I hope that clients and listeners sincerely know how lucky they are to have you looking out for them.
Oh, well, isn't that nice?
Did I make up for it?
Yeah, you did. Do I have to be kind now?
No.
Okay.
I mean, tell us like it is. I mean, I think the gold market was kind to us today, though.
It really was. And it was nice to see it up hitting, breaking through the 1900 level. And we'll have to see what happens. When were they going to release the minutes? Was that today? When did they release the Fed minutes?
Well, from the public meeting, it was yesterday.
Mm. I missed it. Must have been important.
Yeah, no, we talk a little bit about it, but I mean, it's uneventful.
Yes, as most of them are. But
so it's what they didn't report. That has me worried.
Yes, true. And what happened on Monday?
I don't know.
Yes. But so, let me go ahead and do the market report, and let's get started with that. Let me get to my market report. Gold, 29.30 to the upside, 1900 right now in the New York spot price after market, after hitting a high of 1903. Silver, 23.90, up 24 cents. She wasn't over 24 today like she was yesterday. Platinum up $31 at 1102. Palladium up 76 at 2,456. What the folks, I haven't had a chance to look at these markets today, except for gold and silver, of course. So what did the dollar do? It was a little stronger, 0.02, 95.83. Crude oil took a $2 hit, $91.68. Markets were down earlier. The Dow drops more than 600 points, blaming Russia and Ukraine tensions. 622 to be exact, 34,312. S&P was down 94. That's a little over 2%. And the NASDAQ was down almost 3%, down 407 points. Let's see what the Asian and European markets do. The Nikkei was the only one in negative territory. All of Europe was down, of course. So no surprise that ours, well, let's see what the 10, the 10 years, 1.96. So that dropped. On the 10-year yield. So this was the worst decline of 2022. And Russia, Ukraine, let's see, senator threatens to block resolution. I don't know. Blinken is going to address the UN, so that's not good. You know, and Dave, they were trying to say that Russia was pulling back their troops, but they weren't doing anything of the sort, were they? So maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later in the program.
Indeed.
Let's go ahead and talk why gold. And, you know, we saw the hit, what makes these markets interesting is that what started a new trend isn't too important. It's a strength in a rally or the weakness in a break. It's true that there are some mega institutional and wealthy investors manipulate the markets. That's in all markets. But markets also tend to go through the price discovery process no matter the market. So there always has to be a buyer and a seller. Until further notice, you should be thinking long on gold and silver, and you should own them on the physical basis with capital that you don't need anytime soon. Your savings, your investment savings. And you put it away on that rainy day, and your patience and discipline through these difficult times that we're going to face, you will be the winner.
Yeah, for sure, Melody. The insurance policy that you often speak about is the fundamental value of gold. And so it's almost always the time to buy and especially hold gold and silver. And, you know, this morning, it was already trading near its closing price. It's following the release of housing data from January, with housing starts disappointing and building permits beating expectations. Housing starts declined over 4%. Still 1.6 million units in January, according to the Commerce Department. Consensus forecasts were calling for it to be around 1.7, up about 8,000 from December. For the year, housing starts were up 0.8%. Now, at the same time, building permits, which we know are a precursor to future housing projects, were up 0.7 of a percent to about 1.9 million. Nehru's 0.8% from the prior January levels. Now, home building did cool in January because of labor and material shortages, but CIBC World Markets economist Catherine Judge pointed to some positive signs, saying the strength in permits adds to the existing overhang and is a positive indicator for home building ahead in the months to come, as worker absenteeism and supply chain issues will improve over the course of this year. But the bottom line, as Melody alluded to, most analysts pointed to the Russia-Ukraine tensions as the primary reason behind today's gold rally and the big falls in the paper market. Of course, they say investors are seeking safe havens on reports that actually shots have been fired along the Ukraine-Russia border. Now, whether that's part of a false flag,
I know.
Thing going on, or whether that's reality, I don't know.
Well, I've never, like I said that before on this program, I've never heard a government come out and talk about false flags. So, which tells me, I mean, it's just ridiculous, just ridiculous. And we're probably one of the biggest false flaggers in the world. So I don't know. Who knows? We don't know. But again, the number two diplomat at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow was expelled as tensions continue to flare. Russia didn't provide any details as to why he was expelled. They accused Russia, NATO accused Russia of misleading the world with disinformation by saying it was returning some troops to their bases. They were moving. They had pictures, satellite pictures, showing they were moving. We don't know where they moved to, but so that was one of the gestures that Russia made this week, that everybody thought that they were going to back down. I heard he was actually sending more over there.
I liked Jimmy Kimmel's video of the supposed satellite proof, and it was simply a video of Russian troops and tanks in reverse motion walking backwards away from the border. Sorry, it's not a laughing matter, but you got to sometimes take these things with a little bit of laughter.
Yeah, well, I'm not a fan of him, but that is funny. That is cute. So we'll have to see what follows, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Blinken is before the UN Security Council this afternoon, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin will be joined by Blinken at, in Germany for the Munich Security Conference. Vice President Harris heading that way as well to cavort with our NATO allies. Serious goings on over there. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the fact that you're putting a battle tank on a train and moving it in some direction doesn't prove a withdrawal of troops.
No, so, I mean, it doesn't seem like they're actually moving along in a positive manner. Or yeah. They, you know, if there was, you know, talks and agreements in some of these talks and so forth, they certainly would let that leak out, and nothing has been leaked out. So, but anyway, that's, you know, and then there was reports of Canada's banks. Some of their main banks went offline earlier this week with talks of a run on their banks after Trudeau came out and talked about freezing the accounts and so forth. I mean, there's all kinds of cyber warfare going on, and that could have been something like that. So I really don't know. I've read some things. I don't know. I would have to read more, but there certainly is a lot of chatter about it. And
The signs are there and flashing, yeah. Flashing red, I'm afraid. I mean, yes. When you see reports of cyber attacks hitting Ukraine, you know, at the same time of this buildup of troops and artillery, it's sending the world to the brink.
Yes. So, I mean, it's just, and it's another sign is like, you know what, if these guys can hack into all of these major banks and governments and what makes you feel so confident about your cryptocurrencies and about your bank accounts that you, and your, you know, your business that you do online? It's, and I know people think, well, it's just little old me. Nobody's going to mess with me. But if they can mess with 1,000 of yous, you know, 1,000 of the little guys and so forth, it does begin to add up. But anyway, let's see what else is going on. Mortgage rates, Dave, they're beginning to jump. They jumped again this week, approaching levels not seen since 2019. So I guess we're back. The average rate on a 30-year loan reached 3.9%, up from 3.69%. From the previous week, a year ago, the long-term rate was 40% lower at 2.81%. The last time the 30-year rate was higher was in May of 2019, and the average rate on a 15-year fixed-rate mortgage rose to 3.15%. So they're beginning to rise on their own.
Yeah, and at the same time, prices for a new home jumped 14% in the last year, as much as 30% in some cities, as we talked about a few programs ago. Housing's been in short supply since even before the pandemic, and higher prices and rising interest rates in the coming weeks are going to make it even harder for particularly new home buyers. Oh, that's interesting.
What's that?
No, I just heard a random rooster crowing in the background. Thankfully, it didn't penetrate the doors of the home studio.
I heard it.
Oh, you did? Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Life in the western suburbs of Philadelphia. Isn't it a little late for roosters to be up and crowing, by the way?
I think it's that time of the year. There's a pond where behind where I live, and the ducks were very active. And for some reason today, I don't you know, but
probably being bullied by those bullfrogs.
Maybe, or the wind. Could be the wind. But anyway, American consumers, hey, last month's retail sales trounced expectation, rising 3.8%. Economists were expecting a rise of just 1.8%. That's a month after a drop of 2.5 in December. But part of, and probably January's spending jump is because of inflation. When prices rose 7.5% on an annualized basis. So remember, it's inflation that makes these numbers so much better. But nobody will talk about that, will they, Dave?
The decline of purchasing power as we speak.
Yes.
Well, look, the Philadelphia Fed today said that its gauge of regional business activity fell 31%. From the prior month to 16 from a little over 23. Any reading above zero indicates improving conditions, but economists were expecting a higher reading of 19. The headline index is based on a single standalone question about business conditions, unlike the national ISM manufacturing index that we talk about, which is a composite based on several components. Now, the barometer on new orders fell to 14.2 in February from almost 18 in the prior month. And the shipments index fell to 13.4 from 20.8. That's the lowest reading since August of 2020. And the measure on six-month business outlook inched down to 28.1. A lot of mixed signals out there, Melody.
Well, you know, I mean, we're going to, you know, there are signs in that manufacturing is slowing down. And, you know, the latest reading of the Philly Diffusion Index kind of fits with that theme. But this economist wants, or is maybe hoping. Maybe hoping, that's a new word, that they're going to blame the worker absenteeism due to Omicron wave than just a start of a softer trend, that things are slowing down. So they think manufacturing appears to have softened in the past 2 months, but hey, it's impossible to know. No, I think it's possible to know.
I think so.
I think it's very possible to know. And it's also possible to know that we're heading into a break because I hear the music. So we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, well, Econ 101, Dave? Is that the topic today?
Yeah, levity is golden. Future expectations. Buying more now, for instance, if you expect shortages later. That used to be tough to teach your classes for Morgan Taylor. She's an economics professor at the University of Georgia. Then came the great toilet paper rush. of 2020, and I guess paper towels to a slightly lesser extent. We all hoarded it, expected the supply to run out, wanted to beat our friends and neighbors to the punch. Well, these days, students apparently getting the idea pretty easily. Why does that matter? Well, the weirdness of the pandemic economy provides fabulous examples for econ profs around the country, according to Taylor and some of her colleagues. Material all of a sudden feels relevant and fresh. Students can use what they learn to explain to friends what's happening with rising prices, various shortages, and, well, of course, the job market, which they'll soon be entering. And with more college, well, they hope. And with more college students back in person, professors say they're feeling a new urgency from them to learn, certainly something less palpable during remote school. Hand sanitizer also keeps coming up in classrooms. Another professor shows students a photo he snapped at an Aldi's of the price crossed out on a bottle of the once hot product. Keeps going down and down. And younger kids are learning supply and demand in a way that really hits home this time of year, Melody, via Girl Scout cookie shortages and their higher prices.
I'm glad I got mine already.
Oh, well, look, we're all trying to make sense of the world and economics.
As long as we have our Girl Scout cookies, we're
indeed,
good.
Indeed. All else in the world be damned. You know, economics once seen as somewhat irrelevant by younger folks, getting a fresh look in these strange but true days. And that, Melody, is this week's levity, and brevity is golden.
Well, you know, it's good that at least they're beginning to maybe open their eyes or somewhat, but you know what? They need to be taught more than just the supply and demand.
We need to
teach them about money.
Lectures. Yes.
Teach them about money and how the real world works and what having the lack of a gold standard has done to our purchasing power. And something teach them about debt. And,
unfortunately, you don't find much about that, do we? I mean, I talked to a good friend of mine, an old classmate from high school who just retired as a history and economics teacher, and he said what he found interesting, but predictable, I think, is the econ book that he taught out of, that his school district bought for him, was published under the name of Dow Jones Incorporated. Yeah. So, you know, you're getting a slant on things that,
yep.
well, you know, might not be the real thing.
That's certainly. Amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know which is worse, something by Dow Jones or the government. You know.
Yeah.
The government is a silent. But anyway, that's amazing. But yeah, that's unfortunately they might have an interest, but they're not being taught what they really need to be taught. And certainly it will be slanted and misguided. You know, we talked about mortgage rates going up, and now Miami is now the most expensive housing market in the country, even surpassing New York. I can't imagine that'd be hard, the condition that New York is in today. I mean, who would even want to move to New York unless you had to? Home prices in Miami have soared, again, propelled by migration of out-of-state buyers and renters, all from many who've moved from the Northeast. Wages have not risen at the same pace, though. A household in the city of Miami would have to contribute almost 80% of its income toward home ownership.
Wow.
That's a lot. 80%. That's based on a median home price there of $589,000. The median household income is $43,000. Really?
A lot of retirees.
Yes. Miami has moved higher in the ranking of at least affordable cities for housing in recent months, eclipsing L.A. in October. New York became the second least affordable city in February. A third ranking L.A. households can expect to spend 74% of their annual income on housing. But, hey, their median home price is almost $1 million. It's so funny, Dave.
Wow.
That's sad, not funny.
Well, you know, it sort of makes sense then. You see, and the Miami number then is misleading, but this New York number kind of tells you why. With so many New Yorkers and other Northeastern, leaving the Northeast for Miami during the pandemic especially, even though there are a lot more retirees per capita down there than there are up this way. I mean, you can see if your average home price is around $1 million, well, you're taking that equity with you to wherever you're moving, whether it's downsizing or not. So you're paying, a little more than half. I don't know what you get for $589,000 in Miami. If it's a high-rise condo or whatever, but you can see that the equity that you're bringing from New York, you're reinvesting in a property that costs less down there. But anyway, still, 80% is if you're a Floridian hoping to move up the ladder, that seems like a big challenge.
Well, what's amazing, though, is when you look at, and then we'll move on in this topic, but when we're looking at the, and it's on in all of them. I mean, New York is almost the same as L.A. when you have median home prices of $900,000, close to $1 million, but your income is $68,000.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you pay? I mean, even if you have two, so it's still, what, $120,000? I mean, how do you make it?
you live with another family, a family of roommate, unrelated roommates. I have a son of a good friend of mine just out of college, got a job in New York with one of the big six accounting firms. Well, or however many there are these days. And he pays. Now, he's on the Upper East Side, I think right at the upper part of Central Park. And he pays $6,000 a month in rent,
oh,
Melody,
my.
For a three-bedroom. Now, his share, he has two other roommates, so his share is is just $2,000, but that's a lot of money for one kid right out of college paying a student loan and, you know, looking to buy a car and whatever.
Well, you don't have drive cars in New York.
This is true. I sorry about that.
He won't be anyway. Well, you know, China has rejected a U.S. accusation today that Beijing is failing to live up to its market opening commitments in a new round of complaints. As we see companies waiting for the two governments to restart talks on ending their tariff war. We shouldn't end the tariff. We shouldn't do that. Just leave it go. China's Ministry of Commerce criticized the Biden administration for saying it's developing new ways to deal with Chinese trade tactics. U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai said Beijing has expanded its state-led non-market approach instead of carrying out market opening promises made when it joined the WTO in 2001. The complaint is completely at odds with the facts, said Ministry of Commerce spokesperson Gay Fang, who said there are many different market economic models, Dave.
Well, President Biden has said he wants better relationships with Beijing, but has yet to say what he plans to do about the tariff hikes imposed on Chinese imports by his predecessor, and whether you agree with Melody's position or not. I mean, diplomats from the two sides have reportedly talked by telephone since Biden took office last year, but there haven't been any announcements for the two sides to actually meet and discuss. Now, Washington's apparently exploring new ways to use the so-called domestic trade tools to achieve a more level playing field with China, according to Tai's office. But Gao responded by saying the U.S. should make its trade tools conform to WTO rules rather than adopting a different set pursuing unilateralism, protectionism, and bullying in the name of seeking a new strategy. Them be fighting words, Melody.
Mm. Oh, I'm scared. I'm scared. But anyway, here's another central bank who decided to keep its interest rates unchanged for a second consecutive month, Turkey. Despite their soaring inflation, and of course many in that country, they're struggling to buy food and other basic goods. Now, this came from this bank's monetary policy committee that says it's going to keep its policy rate constant at 14%. That's funny. Last month, the central bank put its rate-cutting policy on hold after reducing borrowing costs by 5 percentage points.
That means it was 19%.
Yes. Yes. Soon to be here in the United States.
Whoa.
Well, you know, how much did their lira lose?
50% more.
Yeah. But so there you have it. What do you say on that?
Well, the Turkish lira actually lost 44% of its value against the U.S. dollar last year, while inflation there surged to 49% last month, reaching a 20-year high and, of course, eroding their citizens' purchasing power, not to mention savings. And experts say that the real rate of inflation could be a lot higher than that official figure. Now, what does that sound familiar with, Melody? Say here? Well, Erdogan's government has introduced a number of unconventional measures to halt the devaluation of the lira instead of raising interest rates. He claims he's the enemy of high interest rates and inflation. Yet, once again, watch what they do, not what they say.
Or watch what they say and not what they do.
Oh, well, yeah, that you're right. Words do matter. Last week, the government said it was decreasing their value-added tax, sales tax on food, to 1% from 8%. So our
that's a big drop.
Lingering NATO ally there is on the verge of going Venezuela on us.
Yep. You don't hear much out of Venezuela anymore, do we? We'll have to check and follow up on that soon. Let's see. I think Butch and I talked about this, about these companies who exploit these rising inflation to make increased profits. And there was a program. Although, Dave, you know, who defines what the price is to make it exploited?
Well, there are different ways of measuring that. I mean, you can just look back, look at what the rate, their profit margins were before pandemic, either, in 2019 or, the past 3 or 5 years. And then, look at what they are now, compare them. If they're way out of whack, well, the exploitation, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder.
Yes. Yes. And so, but this program was unveiled today by the Justice Department, Antitrust Division, and the FBI. I wish they would investigate the multinational corporations and things like that a little bit more. But because, how does it? You know, again, folks, this is just a way of showing how difficult it is for a mom and pop shop out there anymore, because they do have a limited supply with the issues with the supply chain. They only have so many items on a shelf. So, yeah, I can see why they're trying to get a little more for it, because where they used to have 10, maybe they only have one.
Yeah.
So, and once that one is sold, how are they going to survive?
And if they were closed for 6 or 9 months in 2020,
yes,
I mean, trying to make up for lost time, they definitely should not be the targets of any of these investigations.
No. Now, I can see gasoline, and I shared this story before with, you have these bad storms, these catastrophic events, and you have the outlying gas stations that might work, and yeah, they'll increase their rates significantly and so forth. To me, that's when you exploit pricing. But I guess we're out of time. I hear the music.
Producer's exploiting us.
Yes. We'll be right back, folks. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. truthandradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of clients this final segment. Call her at 1-800-375-4188. Now, at their last policy meeting, most Federal Reserve officials said they would look to raise interest rates more quickly than planned if inflation doesn't come down. I know this is old news by now, but the minutes from the meeting out yesterday emphasizing the importance of remaining flexible as the Fed moves away from its ultra-easy monetary policies. The minutes from the January policy meeting showed that Fed members are already on board with steeper, more rapid rate increases than in recent history and would speed those plans up further if inflation continues at its scorching pace. Now, a quote, number of Fed leaders also accelerated their timetable of shrinking the Fed's $9 trillion balance sheet, now expecting to do so a little later in the year. The officials stressed the importance of maintaining flexibility to adjust policy on the basis of risk management considerations as a guiding principle in a highly uncertain environment. Blah, 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 blah. Most participants said if inflation does not move down as they expect, it would be appropriate to remove easy money policies more quickly than expected. However, some said they saw a risk in doing so, or that doing so would cause financial markets to tighten unduly. Most of the officials indicated they see a faster path of rate increases than in the tightening cycle that started back in 2015. FOMC members also signals they intend to raise interest rates at their March meeting, but it remains uncertain whether they'll move with their customary caution, raising rates just a quarter of a percent or more aggressively, given this higher inflation. A whole lot, however, has happened since that January meeting. We've since learned that job creation was exceptionally strong in January, with wages rising more rapidly, and that both consumer and producer indexes were rising fast as well, although sentiment in both those areas, not so much. Nevertheless, the inflation has prompted rising market odds that the Fed will raise interest rates a half a percentage point in March, which it hasn't done since 2000 in the midst of the dot-com implosion. The question is, should the Fed stick with its customary gradualist approach, staying behind the curve on fighting inflation, or move more aggressively and risk seeming panicky? New minutes cover meeting that was only 3 weeks ago, but it feels like 3 years given the rush of all this market moving news since then. Now, speaking of market movers, in 2013, progressives around the nation cheered when key senators blocked President Obama's likely appointment of Larry Summers to chair the Fed in favor of Janet Yellen. She wasn't just the first woman to chair the Fed, but also the first labor economist and the only considered liberal Fed chair since Mariner Eccles in the Roosevelt era. Dr. Data, unlike most Fed chairs, honored the Fed's dual mandate to pursue full employment as well as price stability And when Joe Biden turned to Yellen as his Treasury Secretary, she seemed to progressives to be the ideal candidate. Well, that was then. It's been a long fall over the past year, and Janet Yellen has turned out to be a, if not the, big disappointment of the new administration, to progressives anyway. During her years at the Fed, Yellen increasingly took on the outlook of the institution, willing to support the economy with large bond purchases, but overly friendly to the financial industry. As we've told you before, between 2018, when she left the Fed, and 2020, Yellen took in over $7 million in speaking fees from too-big-to-fail banks like Barclays, Citigroup, and Goldman Sachs. When she moved to Treasury, Yellen not only brought with her a Fed outlook, she also brought over several career Fed officials. Critics inside and out the administration, in fact, refer to Yellen's Fedification of the Treasury. The most powerful and conservative of those folks is Nellie Liang, whose title is Undersecretary for Domestic Finance. But that kind of understates Liang's role on financial regulatory issue. Liang is the de facto secretary. Yes, the Fed is an independent agency. The Treasury Secretary is part of the president's cabinet. But Yellen continues to view herself as an independent player, much as she did at the Fed, and she resists anything that seems partisan or political. This sensibility, of course, gives her a profound status quo bias, since all of the regulatory decisions or non-decisions made by Treasury are nothing if not political. The mentality is reinforced by Liang and other top policymakers Yellen has brought with her from the Fed. We won't name all of them. Liang is probably important enough or notable. In 2010, Congress passed the Dodd-Frank Act to prevent a recurrence of the abuses that led to the Great Recession in 2008. Arguably, the most single concept in Dodd-Frank is the idea that both banks and non-banks that are too big to fail, and thus those would be bailed out in a crisis, need to be more carefully monitored and regulated. In the great bailout of 2008-09, the Treasury and Fed spent or lent tens of trillions to rescue lightly regulated investment banks and insurance companies whose impending or eventual collapses risk taking down the entire financial system, not just here in the U.S., but around the world. Well, it was the Obama Treasury Undersecretary Tim Geithner and Assistant Secretary Michael Barr that drafted most of what would become Dodd-Frank. Not surprisingly, the new law concentrated authority in the Treasury. Dodd-Frank's key mechanism for increased monitoring discipline is the Financial Stability Oversight Council, FSOC, which is chaired by the Treasury Secretary and includes the heads of nine other key financial regulatory agencies. That idea was to coordinate financial regulation across the government and to prevent bankers from finding ways to play off one regulator against another and to slip between the cracks. Among FSOC's key responsibilities, which we've talked about before, is to identify systemically important financial institutions, the so-called SIFIs, that would pose serious risks if they collapsed. A non-bank designated as a SIFI is subjected to tougher regulatory requirements than they otherwise would be. And the SIFI displaying signs of financial stress can be required to suspend dividend payments, forego share buybacks, or raise additional capital, or all three. In December 2019, former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, formerly of Goldman Sachs, thank you, Goldman Revolving Door, issued new Treasury guidelines, raising the SIFI threshold for banks from $50 billion to $250 billion. As a result, today there are no non-bank SIFIs. Yellen has the power to reverse Mnuchin's guidelines, which don't require formal rulemaking. But despite pleas from dozens of consumer groups and other regulators, she's not done so. This inaction also reflects the priorities of Nellie Liang, whose division has responsibility for FSOC. Yellen and Lang are also at odds with the more assertive Biden financial regulators on how to deal with cryptocurrencies. But that's another story. Let's just say that SEC Chair Gary Gensler, joined by FTC Chair Benham, have argued that the agencies already have plenty of authority to regulate in this area, and that any new regulation would likely be far worse than the present regulatory framework. Interestingly, a number of Yellen watchers now expect her to be gone within a year, especially if the Democrats lose one or both houses of Congress. One close observer who takes a more charitable view of Yellen explains that financial regulation is just not something that interests her much. Her thing is monetary policy. When she was at the Fed, Yellen relied on progressive Governor Daniel Turullo for regulation and supervision. But at Treasury, she relies on the much more pro-Wall Street Nellie Lang. You know, it turns out that despite all of Biden's good regulatory appointees, the executive branch is also an uneasy coalition full of typical conflicts of interest and strange, strange bedfellows. We should demand more, ladies and gentlemen. And for the last story of the day, on Tuesday, the other day, Senator Pat Toomey of my home state of Pennsylvania, who serves as the ranking member of the Senate Banking Committee, orchestrated a boycott among his Republican colleagues on the committee. Republicans refused to attend the scheduled vote for President Biden's nominees to serve in the Federal Reserve. And without the presence of Republicans, the committee lacked a quorum and thus couldn't vote. Now, as we've discussed on this program, the nominees scheduled for a vote include Jerome Powell for a second term as Fed chair, Lyle Brainard for vice chair, Sarah Bloom Raskin, vice chair for supervision, and Lisa Cook and Philip Jefferson for Fed governor. Sandra Thompson, who was nominated to be director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, was also scheduled for a vote. Toomey's main issue here is with Sarah Bloom Raskin, who would be the Fed's point person on supervision of the mega banks on Wall Street. His concern is that Raskin might actually assume that role instead of allowing it to be outsourced by the Fed to the crony New York Fed, which is literally owned by the too-big-to-fail Wall Street banks. The two bigs just don't want Raskin in that role, and neither do the fossil fuel members. Because Raskin has written on the need to address the financial impact of climate change, agree with it or not. Toomey's been heavily influenced, I might say, he's been heavily financed throughout his career by both Wall Street and front groups for the fossil fuels industry. According to the campaign financing tracking site Open Secrets, over the course of Toomey's political career, the largest donor to either his campaign committee or his leadership pack has been the Club for Growth, which has provided more than $1.25 million to Toomey coffers. That's more than seven times the amount of Toomey's second and third largest donors. Toomey served as the president of the Club for Growth from 2005 to 2009, prior to being elected to the Senate. The Club for Growth, as you may know, is a dark money group that's pushed for things that the majority of Americans are against. Not everybody, but a lot. But big corporations have in their wish list, like the privatization of Social Security. Another front group that supported Toomey is the Freedom Partners Action Fund, which pumped at least $4.3 million into running attack ads against Toomey's challenger, Katie McGinty, in the 2016 U.S. Senate race in Pennsylvania, this re-election. Charles Koch, the billionaire chair and CEO of the fossil fuels conglomerate Koch Industries and his trust, gave $14 million to the Freedom Partners Action Fund Super PAC in the 5 years from 2014 to 2018. Time magazine reports that in 2017, in seven of the eight up for grabs U.S. Senate races that prior year, the Koch-backed candidate won. money speaks in those kinds of elections. In all, Kochback candidates at all levels of races prevailed 96% of the time, a record any outside group would certainly covet. Now, it's likely that Toomey, who has announced he's not running for re-election this year, would have had little trouble getting his Republican colleagues on the Senate Banking Committee to follow his lead with the boycott. A significant number of other senators on this committee have ties to Koch money, Wall Street money, and or the Club for Growth. Calling Toomey's credibility further into question on his hostility toward Raskin is the fact that the full Senate has previously unanimously confirmed her twice before, once as a Fed governor and once as deputy secretary of the Treasury. Well, perhaps they've seen the light. Perhaps there are other reasons. Senator Sherrod Brown, who chairs the Senate Bank Committee, said the boycott that prevented a vote on qualified nominees yesterday meant, or the other day, meant that they had walked out on the American people. Until Americans stand up and demand meaningful reform of campaign finance laws, ladies and gentlemen, just another example of corrupting and disrupting influence we can continue to expect in the People's Congress. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch. Also be on the lookout for a What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks as always to our engineer Todd and to you for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please, please be safe out there. Bye. Oh.